Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of Radio Radar. I'm your host, Hollander Cooper. Here with me in the studio is
Lorenzo Valoria,
Lucas Sullivan,
and Ryan
Talgenick.
How you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Great. Good. Not great. Bad. Tom was too busy for us this week. Too busy and too good.
Too cool for us.
And yeah. Henry Gilbert was off seeing some Nintendo games, which you'll hear about very soon. But yeah, this is the last very normal podcast you're going to get of the year. We're rounding down 2012. Games Radar posted all of its Game of the Year, or most of its Game of the Year stuff this week. But we're not going to go into it until next week when the plan is to go super big with a really, really long episode.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah. Look forward to it.
There's also going to be another special episode next week with somebody that I'm guessing you guys haven't heard of named, is it
Chet
Elstein? Chet Elstein. we're really happy Chet came on to talk about Mega Meme. So
Mega
Chet
Meme.
Chet Elstein comes on to talk about Mega Meme next week. And yeah, we're really excited for that. So if you're a big fan of Chet Elstein or Mega Meme, just swing on back. Henry Gilbert actually.
It was his first hosting of Radio Radar.
Yeah. And
the pressure was
Andy,
on.
And he had his buddy Brett in here to talk about Mega Man with him. So if you're a big fan of Mega Man, 25th anniversary, Brett Elston in studio to talk about it. Swing back on Monday. But next week you're going to get a big show, and then the week after probably another some kind of show. I don't know. It's almost the end of the year. There's not much to talk about at all. But we do have a lot to talk about this week, starting with the top seven, which is a retrospective top seven, the top seven news stories that shook 2012.
And there were a lot
There were a lot of them. And they weren't specific. Like, so there were a lot of things that I think some people saw coming, like the first one, and then some things people didn't see coming, like some of the ones in the middle. So let's start off with number seven, which is the Vita launches in America and just doesn't do what it needed to
much to the indifference to everybody.
Yeah, so the Vita came out in February, late February, right near my birthday.
Good God.
And
did you get one for your birthday?
I did.
Oh, that's very nice.
I bought one for myself for my birthday.
$250
was for the regular model, right?
Yes. Right.
But, plus, and that price sounds like a lot, and then you realize that doesn't come with any memory card.
Plus
so you
memory,
need to spend... You know. Upwards of $100 on a memory card.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
So the system was a little overpriced. Not crazy overpriced. Like everyone kind of expected when they first showed it for it to be a lot more expensive, I felt.
Yeah, which was kind of weird considering it was a handheld system.
Like, I think everyone expected it to have internal memory, though. So realistically, it was $300 to $350 once you factored in that memory card. And it just hasn't been selling at all.
My Vita was more expensive than my Wii U.
Yeah.
So it's kind of depressing in hindsight.
We talked about it recently, but the Vita sales are so low that the 3DS in Japan recently beat it. Was it 46-1?
I think that's correct.
In Japan. So, and the 3D, I mean, granted, the 3DS is selling well. Recent news story that the 3DS has outsold the PS3's lifetime sales in Japan.
In a mere two years, which is
in 2 years.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the Vita's failure to launch really is probably one of the bigger stories. Even compared to the PSP, it just hasn't caught on. Something is necessary. I don't know if it's a redesign or what do you guys
think?
Redesign,
I think they need games. There's nothing I want to play on that system. Even the Assassin's Creed game that came out for it, I was like, oh, maybe I'll buy a Vita for that. And
I asked a lot of people online, like, what was your most disappointed game of the year? And so many people just said Assassin's Creed Liberation. It wasn't terrible. It was just bad enough that it pissed people off.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't think the Vita needs a redesign at all. I think it's a great piece of hardware. There's just nothing that I'm excited about.
And
it's cool to play.
I feel like they need to, even if it's not necessarily a price drop, they need to, like, starting now, the Vita comes with a 32 gig memory.
Well, they tried awesome bundles over Black Friday, and it still didn't sell for crap. They dropped the price to retail stores dropped the price to around like $180 for some of the bundles, and it still just didn't really sell.
I'm looking forward to the thing I'm most forward to over the next few weeks is finally starting Persona 4. I've never played a Persona game. I've heard that they're amazing. I'm a big fan of JRPGs. I just never have time to make time to play them. So I'm like, I'm dying to put like 80 hours onto that system.
Yeah. And based on all the reviews, that'll be a good reason to do it.
The game I've played the most on it so far, though, has been Luminous.
Yeah.
And that's Luminous. It's its own game. It's not a port or a remake, but it is just... It's luminous. It's not a big leap forward.
Yeah.
I did love Gravity Rush, oh, but yeah. Having to buy a system just for that would be a farce.
Yeah, Gravity Rush, yeah. For me, and I know we're going to talk about this when we talk about the contenders for Game of the Year stuff in our show next week. Gravity Rush just... It really helped me. Like, I thought the motion controls on the Vita were so good with Gravity Rush. Like, I felt like that almost justified the system's existence, but not enough to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next big story, though Grand Theft Auto V was announced, I think it was announced last year, this was the first time we finally have gotten real information, and I'd say I think it's much bigger than anyone expected it.
Oh, yeah, by far, because how big did they say the world's going to be? Like,
bigger,
more than
it's bigger than,
everything.
Like, all of their previous maps combined, essentially.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's even going to be fun to, like, explore. Like, is there a point where it's just like, okay, this is too freaking big. Like,
there better be airports or something. Well,
I mean, what I'm thinking is, at any point, you can probably just jump in a cab like you could in GTA 4. But the thing I'm thinking is, like, one of the things that's really fun in any game, open world game, is just kind of getting into a car and driving into the distance. And usually in open world games, after a few minutes, you hit some kind of wall. The idea that you're going to be able to be like, screw it, I'm just going to drive into the desert. Like, that's super cool to me. And three protagonists, you can switch between them at almost any time.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm down with.
The trailer they released, that I was ready to be mildly excited for it, but that trailer was so good. Like, Rockstar is that company that whenever they release a trailer, it just reminds me that I'm going to lose a few hundred hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely looks cool.
So, yeah, and it's coming out early next year, so that's the second biggest story of this year, and odds are it will be one of the biggest stories of next year when it actually comes out. Number five, two Arma devs were jailed for taking pictures of a military base.
Yeah, what a shitty thing, huh? Like,
yeah.
Let's go do some research taking pictures of military shit. And they're like, oh, I guess we're arrested in another country.
I understand both sides of this story. You have two of the developers of a military game sneaking around a military base taking pictures of...
Oh,
yeah,
they were sneaking.
Not a very
I didn't
good
know that.
I mean, I don't know if they were literally sleuthing around, but if you're, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to take pictures of up close of military bases.
Yeah, that's something you would go and, you know, call somebody first and have an escort and do all those kinds of things.
I wouldn't even
work
feel,
on a video game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even feel comfortable doing that in my own country, let alone a neighboring country.
I'm scared whenever I see those fences around a military.
Like,
do
not enter.
I'm already too close.
Those guys have rifles and they know how to use them.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, of course, though, it's a terrible tragedy, and hopefully those guys can get released.
Yeah, that's the thing about the story. They were still in jail.
They're just hanging around.
How long's it been?
Three full months, and they've been denied bail.
Are they in jail with, like, hard dudes? Is that...
I mean,
that
I can't imagine
the situation.
A Greek jail is somewhere you'd want to be.
What other dudes are
having
there in jail?
Having been into an American jail exactly four times, I can say...
Untrue.
I don't know. It's got to be scarier than this. Yeah. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
hard dudes.
Number
define
four. No, don't define hard dudes. Number four, Zynga goes public and all of its executives leave.
They're like, well, that was a good run. See you guys later.
Yes.
Now
it's shares.
So, yeah,
the
shares are dropping.
Does that mean the executives were smart to begin with, and then they just said, let me hop on this train and get off before it crashes?
Or it tanked, and then they...
Yeah, they it started at 10... I'm guessing it's $10 million, not $10. But it's dropped
share?
By, like... Yeah, let's say it was
$10
like
a share.
$10 a share is now $2 a share.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ouch.
That's only a lot of percent drop.
And there were a lot of different reasons given. Some are blaming, like, Facebook changed a bunch of their rules. Because remember how you, like, a year and a half ago, you would get so much Facebook spam from Zynga game?
Yes.
And Facebook actually had a special deal with Zynga that made them exempt from certain rules that put limits on the spam.
That's
but
messed up.
They've slowly peeled back those stipulations to the point where I read recently that, like, now there's no... Like, everyone is on a level playing field with them.
No special exceptions.
No special treatment for Farmville.
Good.
Farmville 2 is pretty.
Is it?
Have you seen it?
Nope.
Like, you have to think about all the companies that have gone out of business. Farmville 2 just poached all, like, the 3D designers. And, like, it's like the graphics are just super nice.
Wow.
I haven't played it. I saw some footage, like, of actual playing. And I'm like, oh damn. That's like it's a really beautiful game that I never want to play.
Oh, no. It's just like... getting into cocaine. You can't stop.
Farming is just like cocaine.
Like I know from personal experience. Right?
So number two, probably, and for my money, I think this is the biggest.
Pretty sure we just skipped number three.
Did we? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Number three.
Maybe because it's really depressing.
It is. Number three is 38 Studios Goes Under.
Their first and last game.
Yes, 38 Studios was picked up
Kingdoms of
by
Amador
Big... Or who?
Epic, wasn't it?
No, before. They were bought by some... Big Huge Games. Was bought by 38 Studios.
Uh-huh.
Big Huge Games made Kingdoms of Amalur.
Yes.
Under 38 Studios. And then 38 Studios went under. And pretty much the entire thing collapsed. They were also working on an MMO.
Which looked amazing.
So what I was reading was essentially 38 or Big Huge Games was making Kingdoms of Amalur, some kind of game that looked like that. They did, but they were doing it independently. 38 Studios bought them and said, like, we're making this MMO. Make your game take place in our universe. And apparently it was close enough where they were like, okay. So they did that. So the Kingdoms of Amalur MMO style thing was going to be essentially that same universe, except with beautiful graphics. Just the best art style I've seen in an MMO in years.
It's like Pixar level.
Ugh. Yeah. Wow. And so they went out of business. The only good thing to come of it is Big Huge Games, even though they're gone, a majority of their staff was rehired and they formed a new studio like a month later because Epic was essentially like, we need a studio to make open world RPGs. You guys. So they now are owned. It's like Epic Massachusetts or something.
Oh. Well, I'm excited to see what comes out of that.
You know what my hope is?
What is?
Infinity Blade, an Infinity Blade style game, except on the scale of Kingdoms of Amalur.
Oh my God.
I still have to play Infinity Blade too.
God it's dang. Super good. And the number two story. Yeah, it's super fun finger swiping. Yeah. You haven't lived until you've done some great things with your fingers.
Yeah.
Number two.
Indeed.
Kickstarter. Everything about Kickstarter.
That came out of nowhere, huh? Like,
it's been around for a while, actually, but it didn't actually, like, everyone just ignored it.
Is it like Twitter, where no one cared, and then suddenly everyone had to have
it's
one?
It's somewhat like that. And this year has been really, really good for Kickstarter. Really early in the year, you had Double Fine's Adventure Game.
And that kind of kicked everything off. Then everybody was like, well,
it sort of
kickstarted
things. You also have a lot of other games, like FTL, one of our best indie games of the year, was a Kickstarter game. I think it was actually a Kickstarter game before Double Fine.
And I believe you are correct.
I mean, even I know that like Cards Against Humanity, the card game was a Kickstarter game.
Yeah, it was Kickstarter. And if you contributed, you got to make up one of the cards. That's kind of where they got most of
it. I think Metagame was a Kickstarter. So many big games. There were some things like that. But this year, I mean, not only did you have the Double Fine thing, but you had the Ouya. Which I am signed up to get.
Are you?
Oh.
Yeah, I technically might. I don't know if it's me or the office. I think I bought one.
You're a $10,000 contributor?
Yes. My name is going to be inscribed on every Ouya.
What was that, $99 you had to contribute? Wow.
And it's going to be coming out within the next few months, apparently.
Oh, that's soon, huh? Wow.
Yeah, like March, they're saying, I think.
Well, then there's also the obvious bad sides of Kickstarter in that there's never a guarantee that anything you fund will ever come to fruition.
Like, so while you still had some great games that look like they're going to happen, like the Banner Saga, which is made by some ex-Neverwinter Night guys, you have
Wasteland 2,
you also, and maybe even Peter Molyneux's game, which we actually have an interview with Peter Molyneux that will be played later on the podcast, and he talks about his Kickstarter game, which last I checked was pretty far away from actually getting funded.
Oh, how many days he got left?
Not many days.
So
he's... Granted, Kickstarters have definitely doubled their value within the last few days. It's like... Sure. Last I checked, it was like 280,000 out of like 430,000 or 450,000.
Oh, boy.
It has a ways to go, but the rally could move it forward.
You never know.
But then you have things like Code Hero, which... tons of people put their money into it. It was essentially a game where you could learn how to code a game.
Yep.
And that the person making it has spent all of the money and is not intending on finishing the game.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the risk they run. They're like, maybe if people fund this, they can make it. And then I feel like a lot of these people that are doing these Kickstarters that haven't made games before probably don't have a super good idea of how much it's actually going to cost them to do these kind of things.
Business or even how sense. To do it.
Yeah, and so when you dump all these money, even if the ideas are cool, there's just never a guarantee that it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and
so
and it's there really... are people who donated over there are people who donated thousands of dollars to this just to see it made. And they're just never going to get.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees with Kickstarter.
Find that guy and kill him.
Yeah. So that's the dark side of Kickstarter. I'm guessing you're going to see a few more big dark.
I am curious to see. Like I think it would be interesting to take a look at another like 6 months and see, out of all of these games that came into Kickstarter, like and out of the ones that got funded, what ones actually came out?
I've seen this sort of thing happen. I did some research onto some other Kickstarter projects, and there were some like people were making like cool 3D printers. And they were like, if we get, like, we'll raise, like, $30,000 and that will be enough money to, like, people who donated $1,000, we'll get them. We have enough. We can easily make, like, 100 of them, no problem. And they ended up raising, like, $2 million.
Ooh.
And they do not even remotely, like, they spend all of that money trying to get to a place where they can mass produce these things. And then, like, the bottom falls out. Like, there have been so many times where, like, they raise 10 times more than they wanted and they don't even remotely have the capability of outputting enough product and then yeah. everything just falls apart.
Yep.
Like people have gone bankrupt after making millions on Kickstarter. And it's not even tech. It's almost
sucks.
Like they needed to just be like have – they needed more limits on how much money they could raise. I think everyone just goes like if I raise 10 times the amount, I'll deal with it. But that's not always – you have to look at seriously how many you could
– So you can't
produce.
Put like a cap on your own
You can. You oh. sort of can. What you could do is like you could say you can donate – you know how you do the different tiers?
Uh-huh.
You can put limits on how many people can donate to that tier. So let's say you are making a board game and you were like, realistically, I can only make 1,000 of these. You could make it so the tier that gets the board game at like $100, maybe only 100 people can buy that one. And then like then you just stagger the next tiers. Like only 200 people can get the $500 one so that you get to the point where like at most I will need to make 1,000 of these. Like anyone can donate below that and get like a digital version because who cares? But people haven't been doing that well, and there have been some horror stories out there.
Yeah, jeez.
On to number one, the biggest news story that shook 2012: the Wii U releases, kicking off the next generation.
The eighth console generation is Yahoo! Underway.
Now there's all this debating on whether or not it actually counts. Even
well,
though
yeah,
it does.
It's an eighth.
It's the eighth generation, guys. Yeah. I don't
the
know.
The Wii counted. The generation isn't defined by how good the graphics were. That's not yeah. what defines a generation.
Yeah.
The Vita and the 3DS are in the same handheld generation, and they're almost a generation apart in terms of graphics. But yeah, the Wii U launched. The sales have been okay. They haven't been amazing, but they also haven't been bad.
Yeah.
The Wii U has outsold the Wii.
What?
In terms of the Wii's first – like the Wii U's first 2 months – or the first month had outsold the Wii's first month, I believe.
Not wow. bad.
That's pretty impressive.
Or it was close. It was like 425 and 450,000 back
I feel like it, I feel like it took the Wii like in 2 to 3 months for people to be like, holy shit, I need
yeah.
one again.
It yeah, was sold out everywhere for those 2 months.
Yeah.
Like you still couldn't get one, but it wasn't until like January when it was like, nope, these are – like I worked at a GameStop. Over a year after the Wii came out, and we still didn't have them in stock ever.
Yeah.
Like, they come in stock. We never had one overnight.
It's because all those old folks discovered the Wii bowling, and they're like, I don't have to have arthritis anymore.
Which, like, I still stand by the fact that the Wii U not launching with Wii U Sports is the biggest mistake Nintendo could
yeah,
have made.
No, it is.
Because
it
imagine is. If it was just, if it was Wii U, or all of the games from Wii Sports except in HD and 10 more games that use the tablet that would have sold to old people.
Yeah,
or maybe
another,
maybe their idea yeah. is like, maybe next Christmas we'll focus on old people. Like maybe next holiday season or the one after. we'll get the hardcore gamers invested early.
I'd play Wii Bowling in HD. That'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd play boxing, tennis,
oh,
all
yeah.
those games.
No, boxing was whack.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was
once
great.
You actually learned, like, yeah. once you, I remember when I worked at a cyber cafe also, and I,
Jesus Christ.
Dude, I had lots of jobs. Also, I worked at all of these places at the same time.
I worked in an adult store also.
At one point, I had four jobs at once. It was hell. But when I worked at the cyber cafe, we had a Wii, and people would talk about, like, they wanted to play Wii, and they talked about they didn't have money, and I'm like, all right, well, if you can beat me in Wii boxing, you can play for free for an hour.
Nice.
Never lost a match. There's a strategy to that game.
Yeah, they were
about boom, 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 boom. One, two punches do more damage. So,
yeah.
Pop, 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 indeed. So, yeah, that's the, those are the seven stories that shook 2012. You can check that out, and a new top seven every week on the newly redesigned GamesRadar.com.
Which I like.
I like a lot, too. There are some people that don't like it.
they're entitled.
They're entitled. You're entitled to your opinion. It seems – and I've also seen – there's a lot of people who don't like it and then a lot of people that didn't like it and then mess with it for a day and then they go like, oh, okay.
That's
like,
all it takes.
I've seen some people – have sent me messages like, hey, why can't – like what page can I go to that gives me like just the news and the editorials on one page just like I could get before? And I'm like, that was never – like – just like before, there's a stream that has everything. Now it's just pictures instead of a sentence.
And if they want the old style, they could just go.
You can just click around.
Go to the other.
Yeah, but I prefer the new style personally.
Features.
I feel like it takes like an hour to get used to. Then you click around, and then you realize that if you scroll down, there's just a list of all the stories like there always ever was.
It's like, oh, it's not the end of the world.
And we can tell you that for us it's better because that way we had to sort of – giving you a little peek inside the curtain. But there were a lot of days where we'd be like – we only had those like three spots at the – or four spots at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have like, all right, well, we know we want to post these stories we're writing. But realistically, we can only like change out two of those spots because we only have a few. So now that we have so many more – we can just, all right, we have four stories to go up today. Sure. More content for your eyeballs.
You could look at them all, man.
Look at everything ever. And then you can just scroll and have yourself a good old time.
I like scrolling.
All right, we're going to have a break. And when we get back, we're going to hit the news and some previews of Devil May Cry, Fuse, and Tomb Raider. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Second segment, and let's jump right into news. VGAs were on Friday. Yeah, Anyone else watch the VGAs?
Yeah, I watched them.
Yeah, they were
fine.
I was amused. I think I'm the only one that didn't watch it.
I mean,
you didn't
a lot of people.
Much,
a lot of people give VGAs a lot of shit. But you know what? I mean, their Game of the Year lists were very similar, I think, to a lot of outlets from what I've seen of nominees being posted so far.
I think as far as the show that was the most respectable, it's literally gotten better every year. I mean, granted, it had a lot of room to improve because I think 10 years ago they gave Game of the Year to Madden.
Oh,
so
God.
And then the year Halo 3 came out, the Game of the Year award was sponsored by Mountain Dew.
Oh,
and it went to Halo 3. Ta-da! But it's gotten better every year. I still feel like Samuel L. Jackson was like the worst choice for a host.
Yeah, that made no sense to me.
I don't know. He wasn't bad.
But he
kept it moving.
He did his shtick. Like he did his internet meme shtick. Well, like last year they had Zach Levy, or is it Zach Levy or Levi?
I don't know.
I think it's Levi.
That guy from Chuck. Who is legitimately a gamer. I heard well before he was hosting that in between takes of Chuck, like when they're like, all right, we have an hour, he went to his trailer and played League of Legends. Like, huge gamer.
Yeah.
Totally respects and gets games. And yet they're like, no, you're not popular enough. Let's get Sam Jackson. But the only issue was they didn't have that many new reveals. Usually you're looking at like five or six new games.
Yeah. But Game of the Year 2013 came out of that.
No.
Dark Souls 2. Game of the Year every year.
Gotti 2014.
And can we just, I'm just going to give Game of the Year 2012, Dark Souls 2.
13.
Right now.
Wow. 2012?
2012. This year, Game of the Year comes out next year.
I thought we were going to get to the moon.
You're right. Game 2012, to the moon. Run 2013 and 14.
Dark Souls 2 trailer. Showed the main character dying several times.
Yeah, well, and that's encouraging.
That's what
happens. A lot of people are freaked out because it has two new directors in place of, oh my God, I can't pronounce his name.
The old directors.
The old director, who is now a supervisor. So that means he's kind of serving more of a consultant role than a direct hands-on role.
Which, generally speaking, a consultant role in a video game or movie means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, he's kind of just like, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it that way, but I'm not.
Yeah, it's just like if you look, it's like from executive producer Christopher Nolan, this mediocre-looking Superman movie. It's essentially that, except with a brutally difficult, overrated console RPG.
But before you guys lose your shit.
I mean, too late, but go on.
Before you continue
before we
to
wipe.
Lose your shit. I mean, just keep in mind, like, From Software doesn't really have the reputation of just, I don't know.
From Software's reputation isn't that one guy.
Yeah.
He's not like the Suda 51 of From Software. He's just the person that happened to make the last
Well, yeah, and look at From Software's properties. I mean, for the most part, almost every IP they have is considered a pretty like hardcore entry in whatever genre.
Even 3D, even 3D Dot Game Hero, which I got super excited for. When you actually started playing, like, that game is difficult as hell.
Yeah,
it's like they're not a company that is going to bow to casual.
Now, yeah, of course, we're not going to guarantee that Dark Souls 2 is going to be incredible, but you know, I'm not going to shit on it until
in fact,
I play
I'll guarantee the opposite.
Well, and they said they'd try to make it more accessible, and I wouldn't have too many problems with that because it's actually a pretty confusing game once you get
right.
into it.
Well, you know, just keep in mind too, accessibility does not equate. Difficulty.
That does
it could be as simple as them actually explaining things like covenants or world tendencies
or
how
the
weapon upgrade system
character
works.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be... It doesn't... Don't get freaked out yet
it
until we see it.
It doesn't mean there's not going to be some, you know, execution or... Blog and
what
or Steam
the hell
guy.
Was that?
execution.
What's it?
Schmog.
Schmog. And
Ornstein.
Executioner Ornstein. Well, whatever. But those guys
those
were
dudes.
Notorious for being ridiculously hard.
I loved the art style of Demon's Souls, by the way. The game was so... I'm not even... I mean, I know you're looking at me waiting for me to make fun of it. I fucking hated Demon's Souls, but I loved the art style in it.
Yeah.
What? Medieval old
The medieval,
schools.
Like, sort of like H.P. Lovecraft. There were some, like, Mind Flayer looking guys in there. There were
that
those guys that
cool.
rang the bells. They were cool. And I want to like it. So I'm hoping, my hopes, I can give you what I want. I know we're, so if you're a fan of the game and you want to see a list of what we want from Demon's Souls 2, that'll be going up pretty soon. But if you want a list of what I want.
Oh, God.
Mandatory online co-op.
Okay.
An easy and a super easy mode.
Okay. Both of which you push a button and the game's over.
Yeah. And... for the new directors to do sort of the Apple style of things. You know how when Apple releases a new iPhone, they start off by talking about how much of shit the old iPhones are? I want them to admit that the original Dark Souls was not very, and Demon's Souls were not very good. Those are the things I want.
So you realize with them doing so, their very lives would be in danger for, I think.
Murder?
Yeah.
For the hundreds of people who care about that series.
Oh.
They'd be so angry!
You are hitting below the belt to some listeners. But
also announced at the VGAs... probably
the
Metal Gear Solid 5?
This trailer is weird.
So if you haven't
Very
been keeping
strange.
Up on
yeah.
gaming news, I'm going to explain this to you the best that I can. So there was a trailer at the VGAs that showed a guy in sort of a futuristic-looking laboratory with a prosthetic arm stumbling through a weird building with like people on fire and running around. And then a door opens up and there's a guy – and the guy's having flashbacks – and there's a guy on fire, and then there's a person riding a flaming unicorn.
Yeah.
And then there's a flash of the guy, and he looks a lot like Solid Snake. So you're like, oh, it's Metal Gear Solid, not 5. Ground Zeroes.
He has, like, his mullet.
He has his basically. Mullet and a scar. But it's like – then the flash is the logo, and it's The Phantom Limb by Moby Dick Studios.
Well, The Phantom
Pain.
Phantom Pain.
Phantom Pain.
The Phantom Bane by
Pain.
Pain.
Jesus Christ.
The Phantom Pain
Get it
by Moby Dick Studios, who's – so that company doesn't exist, number one.
The Moby. Person who theoretically created it,
his name is an anagram
for Hideo Kojima.
No. His first name is an anagram for Kojima, and his last name has Ogre in it.
Like Project Ogre.
Project Ogre. And if you go to the – so here's the biggest clue. The last screen where it actually says the game's name, if you change the like opacity of the screen or the saturation, it says Metal Gear Solid V. The V is important because – a lot of people are expecting that means Metal Gear Solid 5, but none of the other Metal Gear games have used a Roman numeral.
Nope.
And knowing Kojima, that V probably stands for Vita, not 5. What? Like, there's no reason that they would suddenly switch to
that
V. So the different and
interesting.
The images that have been released on the Moby Dick Studios website are the screenshot size of the average Vita game, not of a PS3.
Oh.
So. Bunch of rumors. Some people still say it's Metal Gear Solid 5. Some people say it's a unique downloadable game for the Vita. My personal guess is that it's just going to be Ground Zeroes for the Vita because at one point Kojima did say that every
oh my God.
Game – what?
Transfaring.
Transfaring. Every game they do is going to have transfaring.
It'll happen.
It's happening now.
So yeah, the Phantom Pain.
There you go.
You got it.
Fourth time.
You can check out a trailer analysis of it on GamesRadar.com as well. It gives
it's
you
quite
a
in depth.
It is. And there's a lot of stuff I missed. Like there's the doctor they show looks a lot like a doctor from Metal Gear 2. Not Metal Gear Solid 2, just Metal Gear 2.
Really?
And if you freeze the frame at one point, you see Psycho Mantis.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of.
Like one of those dolls.
Yeah.
From 4.
So, so yeah, there's that. What else were there trailers for? There was a really freaking badass trailer for Lords of Shadow 2.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
Lords of Shadow 2, where it shows that it takes place partially in the modern day.
It reminded me so much of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Yeah, and that's a good game.
Yeah, it was an awesome game.
And I feel like there was another reveal trailer, though I could be wrong. Oh, a new Last of Us trailer that revealed the date, which was May.
Speaking of Last of Us.
Yes.
Multiplayer.
Yes, and multiplayer confirmed, though it's not. Now, what do you remember what the actual... Anyone remember what the actual multiplayer... Or did they even say what it was, really? Does anyone remember? Does anyone remember what it was?
Let me try to remember. Not exactly.
I totally remember. The Last of Us will star at least a few of us, as Naughty Dog has confirmed.
Oh,
the PlayStation 3 exclusive will feature a multiplayer mode. That's actually all it is. Fuck. So, yeah, there's going to be a multiplayer mode.
Yeah.
Multiplayer. Shooting each other.
Do you think it'll be like 4-person and you're just trying to survive? Or like full-scale infected city, like every player?
I hesitate to think
probably going to be exactly like Uncharted.
You think so?
I'm imagining it too.
That just doesn't make sense to me at all. I mean, in any context.
Maybe they'll come up with some cool survival mode or something. Horde. More Horde.
Yeah.
I'm sick of Horde modes.
Are you?
Yes.
Well, speaking of Horde mode, let's move on to Gears of War developer Cliff Bleszinski, who recently left Epic Studios and hasn't really said what he's going to do. Rumors were he's going to go to different studios. He posted a picture on Twitter that he got a cell phone sent to him by Ubisoft with like an Ubisoft logo and some information on it because different companies are just trying to grab him. Though he has said that it's not a matter of if he's going to start his own studio, but when and with who. Confirming that he does want to start his own studio. He doesn't want the Chainsaw Sword Lancer to be his legacy. And he is planning on it eventually.
How soon do you think he will be doing this?
I'm expecting he might. I could see. I mean, he has money. He doesn't have to worry about that. He's probably still has stock in Epic. So I don't know if he necessarily has to worry about that stuff. But I still wouldn't be surprised if he comes back within a few years with a new studio. I'm just hoping it's not what a lot of companies are doing, where it's like, I left the gaming industry. I'm back, and I'm making an iPhone game.
Gears of War.
iPhoneville.
iOS.
Gears of Ville.
Gears of Ville.
So yeah, that's the big news of the week. You can check out plenty of other news on GamesRadar.com. But you guys knew that.
I mean, everybody. I'm there every day.
It's right there on the stream.
You can right on the redesigned stream, which is incredibly intuitive.
Or you can just click the news section and look at it there. But the stream one's easier. So, previews. I actually didn't see anything recently. I blew my load on BioShock. Literally. But I know Mr. LJ Sully got to play a good chunk of DMC.
LJ? Yeah. And by good chunk, you mean half the game.
Dang, I do.
All right, so I'm going to break it down in the simplest way I can. If you are a hardcore Devil May Cry fan, you're probably not going to like DMC.
What?
Really? Well, when you say hardcore,
Hardcore, like you fear change. Anything that isn't Devil May Cry 3, like you hate it. DMC 4, you were like, freak this.
If you were super outraged by the audacity of the developer to redesign the character, there's a good chance you're not going to like this because it isn't the game you're used to.
Hardcore,
I mean, I wouldn't say I know you're
Dante.
I wouldn't say if you're a hardcore fan, you're not going to like this. That's really not fair because I'm a hardcore fan and what I've played, I've loved. But if you're somebody who is genuinely insulted by the idea of them changing anything about the series. Like, if you're unmoving in your hatred of black-haired Dante, or if you're, like, if you legitimately were, like, 30 frames a second, fuck you! If that's you, then there's a really good chance nothing's going
to
change.
That or, like, someone who hasn't played the game for 30 hours can get a double S rank? No, that's not for me. Like, then you're going to have a problem with this game. But if you're like me and you've loved the idea of Devil May Cry, but you're maybe not the best at it, you will absolutely love this game, as I did.
And,
because stylistically, it's like the most accessible the game's ever been and the most, I'd say, imaginative, just because... So all the other Devil May Cries, the levels were pretty mundane, I would say.
I'd say 4 had the least mundane of the series. 4 had, like, giant sweeping cathedrals. And, like,
yeah,
but, like, 1, I didn't play 2 because I heard it was just the worst. But 1 and 3 was usually, like, dark streets or dark castles, and you were fighting marionettes. That was, like, a
and,
majority
like,
of 1 and 3.
Spaces yeah. and all mm-hmm. that. But this one is, like, wide open areas. I don't want to say you actually run around them because you don't. It's still pretty guided. But there are really cool level designs that you've pretty much never seen anything like.
Well, I'm really fascinated, too, by the fact that Limbo City, right, is like this weird...
It is. It's pretty trippy. Basically, you get to see, like, the behind the scenes of Raptor News, which is basically Fox News, and Virility, which is basically Red Bull. And it turns out they are... The spawn of demons. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, because isn't Limbo City like a demonic realm of like
it's
an
like,
alternative dimension?
Yeah,
or something
it's like a
like
parallel
that.
Dimension ruled by demons. And
but this game takes place half. Doesn't it sort of take place in the regular world also?
It's mostly for story stuff. During the gameplay, you're going through crazy levels that are like deforming around you as you run through them, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and isn't it true like. I remember this happening at E3. Like, doesn't the music kind of become more intense as your combo strings go higher? Or is that correct? I'm pretty sure this is something that's in
that
the game.
If that is the case, then they did it in such a subtle way that I didn't even notice.
Yeah, I think the longer you chain your combo strings together...
The more dubstep.
Yeah.
It is some beats, not... This isn't metal. This isn't electric guitar type.
How often was he shirtless?
Not often. And actually, it's weird because... They'll censor themselves sometimes, but other times, like, not at all. Like, he'll have a curse off with one of the bosses. And then in the next scene, they have him, like, not saying the F word or something.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Is the tone good, though? So I think a lot of people are probably fans of the series. They're just not... I mean, the people who really freaked out were, like, those were the people who, like, Dante is their avatar on... On any gaming website, and that's their series. Like, if you ask them, what's your favorite series, they're like, Devil May Cry, obviously. Haven't you seen my chest tattoo?
Whenever they talk on message boards, their signature contains all their stats of how awesome they
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
I totally have a friend with ebony and ivory tattooed on
oh,
his
God.
Body. It's awesome.
Is he excited or not excited for this one?
I have no idea.
So, how is the story and how are the characters? A lot of people are worried that...
Okay,
that
so
trash talking Dante isn't for them.
Honestly, to me, it's funny. Like, the things he says are funny just because he's so smarmy in comparison to his adult form.
Right.
Although, even then, he's still kind of a smart aleck. But here, he's just like, I don't give a darn. I'm gonna do what I want. And in terms of characters...
For the record, he says, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I
yeah.
want. Not, I know Lucas censor. I don't want you to think that the game is censoring itself as Lucas does.
I'm not. I'm just going to play a little conservative today and do what I feel like doing.
All right. So
as for the characters. So yes. If you've played Enslaved, that is a really good starting point to understanding what this game will be like. And that means the facial animations are godlike.
Yeah.
And
oh, cool.
Some of the characters make no sense. That's basically
which is actually,
what you're going to get.
Which is, it's actually probably fits better in Devil May Cry than it did in Enslaved.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they're relatable and, like, this isn't a spoiler. Early on, you get to meet Virgil, and I think he's the coolest iteration of Virgil the series has seen.
Awesome. I'm excited.
But then there are other characters who are just like, who are you? Why are you here? Oh, you're gone, and I'll probably never see you again. Now,
unless
they
show up in the second half of the game.
Yeah, that's the story side of things. The gameplay is a lot easier, I will say, because I remember the first time playing Devil May Cry, the original, I got stuck on, like, the fourth mission. And here, I got through the first 10 levels and never died.
Is there a harder difficulty, or maybe not in the preview build?
So, yes, but then there's little stuff like, so typically the yellow orbs will let you continue. Like,
right.
They're the only thing that lets you continue. Here, you can continue pretty much for free because you'll start off in the same area. And the yellow orbs will now revive you fully, just like where you stand.
Oh, okay.
Which is really forgiving. Another thing is that you don't have to spend red orbs on upgrades anymore. So you actually get a separate bar that tracks, you know, how long your combos are, how fancy they are.
Right.
And you get ability upgrades based on that.
Huh. Awesome.
So it's a lot more accessible, which I have no problem with. But some people might say this isn't taxing enough. This isn't
pushing
me to
we'll
my limits.
See if people think that, because the game's out in like 3 weeks.
Mm.
So
yeah,
be sure to swing back for – we'll have a review around
yes.
then.
And I want to say that the boss fight, which I fought at the end of the preview build, was one of the coolest boss designs I've ever seen.
Awesome. And you don't want to spoil what it is, though?
No.
All right. Hmm. I can tell
Very
you what
cool.
it is. It's you're fighting a giant eagle.
Untrue.
A giant eagle with Ryan Talgenic's face.
Oh, my God. That is the coolest boss design I've ever heard of.
You will not be able to kill it, Ryan. You'll just bask in its
crying.
Glory.
So, yeah, Devil May Cry comes out early January.
Yes.
And awesome. Lorenzo, you saw Fuse?
I did see
now, Fuse.
Fuse
used to be Overstrike.
Used
yeah.
to be Overstrike, made by the guys.
They beat the fuck out of it with a generic
yeah.
stick.
It looks
what it
so
looks like.
Cool, and now I just, I don't know.
Yeah,
if
I know they got rid of those cool cartoony graphics and stuff.
The excuse they gave made absolutely no sense.
What was
it? Their excuse was like, it's really violent, and it didn't really fit for it to be sort of cartoony and violent. It's like, so Borderlands, like there are so many things that are cartoony and violent. How can you use that as an excuse?
Yeah.
Change it from Overstrike to Fuse.
Yeah, who knows? But, if you don't know anything about it, I didn't really know anything about it, but it's by the Insomniac Games, the guys that made Ratchet & Clank. And
known for their guns.
And, Resistance. And it kind of has that tone, the gameplay. It's four-player co-op focused on that. You could go through the whole campaign. There's multiplayer, four-player, like Mass Effect 3-style horde mode that they were showing off recently. It's called Echelon or something. But
Delta Echo Echelon.
But the whole thing is like set in this futuristic world, and there's like this alien goop called Fuse that you use to like use special powers. So each character has different unique powers. Like this one guy has a magnetic field that'll block bullets, and another person has these bolts that'll stick people to walls, and he has fire powers that he could like give to the other
All
players.
All thanks to alien gel.
Yeah, this alien goop.
I'm
stuff.
So happy that Fuse exists, you guys.
And then,
like last night, I was getting ready to go to bed, put some Fuse in my hair.
Yeah, you're like
just made me look suave as shit.
Makes you glow. Puts you to sleep really easy.
Gives me a nice afterglow.
Helps you pick up the beesies.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, get those beesies.
It really does. And I remember Lucas was saying he went clubbing and he used Fuse on his face.
On my genital region?
Whoa!
Sorry.
Easy.
Wow.
Easy, bro.
Was
you
not going
easy,
there.
Bro. You know what I'm saying?
Did you do that pit cross thing?
double pits to chesty.
Double pits to chesty.
I'm really excited for the axe spin-off of Fuse. The commercial is somebody who does like the pit chest cross, and then all of a sudden his entire body catches on fire. And
like the same motion I use when I put my seatbelt on. That's what you do to put axe spray on?
No.
If you want to get the ladies, yeah.
Usually what I do is I just pour as much as I have of it into a bathtub and then just flop around like a Magikarp. Like a Magikarp just struggling. So how the alien gel, does it like infinite? You just use it however much you want? Or?
Well, no, it kind of charges up. And
it's mana? Is it mana?
Yeah. Okay. It as you kill dudes, it powers up this bar, and then you could use your special ability. Like the guy I was using, he just gave like fire attributes to everybody's guns. So all the players just kind of help each other out with their own powers and stuff.
Is it just third person shooting when you're not using the Fuse stuff?
What?
Alien
no,
stuff?
No, it's third person shooting the entire time.
What are you talking about?
What I mean is, like, are there no cool powers until you've built that meter up?
No, well, everybody has, like, a special gun. Like, this one girl has, like, a warp gun that'll, like, once you kill a bad guy, it turns him into, like, a warp field that sucks in and damages other people. Whoa. And the enemies are pretty tough, actually. If you don't have 4 players working together, it's actually pretty difficult to take down some of these guys. So they all, I died a lot.
So they all have those basic side attacks happening while you're building up the meter?
Yeah, so you're building up the meter, and then, like, I was the guy with the fire gun ability, and he had that
Johnny
this
fire
bolt,
gun,
like this crossbow bolt, and he could stick people to walls, and they'd just be stuck there for a while.
So by the way,
like,
I've always said that if you want to make a game that will instantly be fun, add in either a gun that sticks enemies to walls,
right,
or the ability to control a projectile in first person, like control an arrow. Any game ahead, like even like was it a Dark Sector, yeah, and Singularity? So. It's like, that is the easiest way to make your average game super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let me stick shit to walls. All I want to do is stick enemies to walls.
Especially if you can get multiple enemies stuck to the walls with one bolt.
Or, yeah, or if you can use both. Use, like, a bolt that you can just control in first person. Oh, we have a game design going on right here.
Oh, yeah.
I think you should contact Insomnia.
But yeah, it's that's probably
your enthusiasm for this game is intoxicating.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's just, so when's it coming out?
4-player co-op. Next year, early next year.
Awesome. And that's another funny thing, and so is Tomb Raider, which we're going to get to in a second. But it's like, so Microsoft and Sony haven't confirmed their next-gen consoles. And if you look at the release calendar, nothing comes out after June.
Huh.
It's super interesting. Even on the Nintendo front, there's just like, it's like, and then everyone just stops making games.
Nintendo forgot they had a new console.
Yeah, they're busy not making games.
That is kind of suspicious.
We can't go on together with suspicious minds, though. So let's jump right on over to Lara Croft's new adventure.
Lara Croft. I have the best character impersonations ever. You want to hear my Alfred one from Batman?
Yeah.
Mr. Wayne, some people just want to see the world burn.
That's so bad that I might edit it out of the podcast.
Anyways.
iTunes ranking just fucking
plummeted. Yeah,
it just like projectile shit.
No, that was good. That's going to get me a job.
Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider actually was really awesome.
I'm so mad at you right now.
I got to play the first three. I got to play the first 3 hours, which was pretty cool. I thought it was just going to be an Uncharted clone, but it wasn't. It was really cool.
How did things kick off? Shipwrecked
right at the beginning. She's kind of like, I set off to be a great adventure, and then my ship got wrecked, and all my friends died. That's pretty much how it happens.
At what point does she meet up with Jason Brody?
That is a very eerily similar beginning.
Except she's likable from day one.
Yeah,
Jason Brody
likable.
Takes a good 20 hours, so you don't want to punch him in
Brody's
the face.
Jason Brody's a nab.
All I want to do when I see Jason Brody, I'm just like, dude, I just want to fucking pull out and smear it off ice and make you drink it.
Ice.
That's all I want to do.
Well, the weird thing is,
he looks nothing in the like promo renders than he does in game. It's like two different characters.
Because he's got the blowout in game. You know, the like Pauly D, Jersey Shore blowout.
Oh, God.
Come on. Let's bring
come on, J-Bro.
Let's do this.
Anyways, Tomb Raider. It's far, far. If you're going to compare it to
Uncharted. I'm still
mad
at you.
Why?
About the Alfred impression.
Some people.
No, don't do it again. I only have so much time to edit this podcast.
All right. Anyways, if you're going to compare Tomb Raider to Uncharted, it's a far darker game. And it's, I don't know, everything about it, it really felt like Lara is trying to survive versus just pulling guns and just blasting everybody that she comes across. Because, I mean, you don't even get a gun for, like, the first probably almost 2 hours of the game. And, you know, so it starts off shipwrecked on an island. Then it goes into that scene that that we've previewed a ton of times now, where she's kind of tied up in a cave. Hanging, suspending from the roof of a cave.
You don't want that.
Nah, and she...
In a cocoon,
which she swings into a torch, sets it on fire, breaks free, falls on a piece of rebar, impales her side. And this is one thing that the game kind of never addresses. Like, for the first probably hour and a half, she's, like, clutching her side. And then it's just magically healed, I guess. Like, there's never really...
Time heals all wounds.
Yeah, I guess
so.
But
she just stopped bleeding.
But, I mean, the combat is always... everything about the game there's always kind of this sense of urgency, and every situation does feel like it's a life or death thing. Like when you in the combat sequences, they're always small encounters. There's never more than like maybe three or four enemies on screen at once. And it's kind of neat because when she first gets her weapons, like first you get a bow and then you'll get a handgun. And when she's holding them at first, she kind of holds them awkwardly and like you're just like, no, that's definitely not how you hold a gun. But eventually she kind of gets the hang of it. And it's just cool how the animations kind of reflect
that
sort of thing. But yeah, the camera pulls in real tight and it's all like shaky and creepy.
How are the levels? Are they pretty much one path?
They're a little more open than that. Usually there's branching paths, but you're probably only going to take the one where your objective is. And she does kind of have like an instinct mode, sort of like in Hitman or a detective mode in Batman, where it like kind of just highlights certain things.
20-year-old girl mode.
Yeah, survival instincts is what it's called. And because, you know, she's learning to survive.
She's
and
now a survivor.
She can see, it just kind of highlights stuff you can mess with. And yeah. It's really good. I'm excited. It comes out March 5th.
Yeah. So this holiday season was okay. The next 4 months, fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It's gonna be just irresponsible what the game industry is doing.
They're like, so let's forget October, November. Let's just go balls to the wall February, March. How about that?
Mm. I see nothing wrong with that.
I'm so
March is
angry
December.
At Ryan.
For that impression.
Missed away.
No. We're going to go to break. We have an interview with Peter Molyneux and then a short third segment because we just don't have anything to review. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Sound good, Mr. Wayne?
Mm. Yeah.
We'll be right back. Hey everyone, this is Hollander Cooper with GamesRadar.com, here with industry legend Peter Molyneux. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm a bit worried about this industry legend thing.
You've earned it.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Isn't that written on a tombstone?
Well, not yet.
Is it kind of like saying...
We're just letting you know now that when you have a tombstone, we're going to write industry legend on
Thank
it.
You.
There's nothing you can do that will negate your industry legend standpoint. So... Lots of people know you from the past. You're the reason you have the legendary status. You have games like Fable, Black and White, going back even further with Populous. Now, can you explain for people who haven't been following you what you're doing now?
What I'm doing is there's this interesting thing where there was this genre of game. I mean, you're giving out lots of awards to lots of genres of game. I bet you're not giving out any God game genres.
No, we're not. That slipped through the cracks this year.
That is the problem. Is there was this lovely genre of game called God Games where you felt as a player that you had control over a living world. And that's the thing that I want to give people, a living world, and you have control over it. And the world reacts to what you do. And the control that you have enables you to be nice or nasty or good or evil and to battle against your friends and to use all your godly powers to annihilate your friends. I love that concept. And I wanted, you know, when we thought about this, can we take that concept, which seems to be dying out as a genre, and can we reinvent it and reinvigorate it around these very simple mechanics about taking little bits from some of the games that I've done in the past, like bits from the first game I did called Populous, bits from a game called Dungeon Keeper, and bits from a game called Black and White. Can we mix them together and recreate this genre of game for today's hardware and platforms?
Right, but you're not doing this under Microsoft's banner anymore. You're off on your own.
So I'm off on my own. But I'm an independent developer, and I'm really enjoying the freedom of being able to say, okay, well, let's do this. And so the first thing that we did was the Crazy Curiosity. And we learnt an awful lot from Curiosity. An awful lot what we learnt from Curiosity we're putting into this game called Goddess. And we're injecting all of these new features in as well to, you know, make something new and different. And doing it incredibly quickly. You know, when you think we founded this company back in March with just three people, and here we are in December, and we're soon to release the prototype for this game Goddess, and you know, people can look at that prototype and play around with their prototype, and we've done Curiosity as well. That pace was unthinkable in the more traditional publishers.
Now, do you think that, especially with things like Kickstarter, that breakneck pace is going to be more common in the future instead of this? I mean, everyone thought it was crazy when games went to a 2-year development cycle, and now they're going to like a 6-month development cycle. Yeah. Do you see that continuing?
Well, you know, we've got a problem is that we, you know, in the games industry have had this luxurious time of having 7-year console cycles where we could sit back and say, we're fine, we can spend 2 years on a game, we can spend 3 years on a game. But when you start thinking about PC and mobile and how fast mobile moves, how often the hardware changes, you're lucky to have a 7-week hardware cycle. And so everything's moving that much faster. And what's even more exciting for me is the amount of stuff that you can use in a game. You can start using multi-device play. The idea that you can be playing on a PC or playing on a Mac and then you can pick up your mobile phone and continue playing from exactly the same point. You can use cloud and cloud computing. If you've got really hot, tough things to do on your local device, you can shove it off to the cloud. You can... Yeah, and this is something we're doing with Goddess. You can connect not 2 people together, you know, not 8 people together, not 16 people together. I mean, in case of curiosity, up to 300,000 people playing together. All of this stuff we haven't even begun to experiment with in the games industry. And so that means you have to move fast, because if you don't move fast, someone else is going to do it, and someone else will grab the banner of innovation. So that's why I love this time. I adore all this stuff that's going on and all these difficult, different problems, you know, whether it be cloud and cloud computing or how we charge for a game. You know, the whole idea now that you walk into a shop and you pay $49 for a game, that's changing. It's changing as quickly as you could imagine it changing. So it's a very exciting time.
And to go back to curiosity a little bit, so... Launched it about a month or so ago?
Yeah, it was a month on Tuesday, last Tuesday.
Okay, so a little over a month ago.
Yeah.
People have been tapping away at the Cube.
Yes.
What have you learned from that? What data have you been able to take away from that?
Well, first of all, the first thing I've learned is that I never in a million years did I expect it to be as popular as it was. You know, I thought it was an experiment. We said it was an experiment. I thought it would be downloaded probably, 30 to 50,000 times. I couldn't imagine that any more than that. That 30,000 number was reached within 3 hours of it being released. And now we stand at just over 3 million downloads and an average number of people interacting with the Cube on a daily basis, about 300,000. So that is incredible. And what's so amazing is that the gameplay of that is so minimalistic. You know, that was my theory as well. Let's try something the most minimal gameplay you can come up with. Insanely simple. You know, you just tap. But giving that language, if you like, for people to communicate with each other through just tapping has produced some amazing things. On Curiosity, there's been some amazing pieces of art that art only lasts a few hours before people come along and destroy it. There's been political statements, there's been marriage proposals, there's been an enormous number amount of genitalia. All of this has all been focused on this Cube, all while the world is trying to find out what's in the middle. And, you know, I expected some of that, but not nearly the amount of cooperation. Now, how am I going to use that in Goddess? Well,
that's the question.
The interesting thing is that in Goddess, the landscape of Goddess is like the surface of the Cube in a way. You can sculpt the landscape in any way you like, and the little people will react to that. If you want your little people to spread out over mountaintops and create cities, you can do that just by manipulating the land. Now, what's going to be very interesting, given those tools that we give people, the simple tools with the mouse or your finger, what incredible things people will be able to do. It will be amazing to see. What incredible cities and civilizations of people will be able to build up will be incredible to see. And it's tempting for me as a designer in the old school way of working to try and add more and more and more and more features to empower people to do that. But what I've realized with Curiosity is that you just give people the simple power just to manipulate and sculpt, and they will use that power in incredible ways. So I'll give you a very simple example. On the land, when you get the game, and we've kind of got it working in prototype, you can push and pull the landscape around and create these cliffs. And then you can just tap on the side of the cliff. Now, why you're tapping on the side of the cliff? Because you want to kind of sculpt the land. That is all that we need for people to do some amazing things. We're adding the strategy in there is that the little people will find it very hard to scale those cliffs.
Sure.
And if you tap out little crevasses, then they'll find it even more hard, and it's going to be fascinating to see what people do. And that's just with that one mechanic, is that giving people this simple ability to do simple things and letting them decide how to use those simple powers is really fascinating.
Now, do you think that... So is the approach to Goddess sort of simplicity where it can be simple?
Well, the approach is that you have got... you've got this place we called Homeworld, where you can spend, days, weeks, months, however long you want, it's creating your civilization. And that civilization starts with two people, if you like, our Adam and Eve.
Right.
And over the weeks, using your godly powers and things called gift of the gods, your civilization gradually grows. And then at any time, you can take those little people out of that world, as many as you like, and you can invest them in a multiplayer battle. And in that multiplayer battle, it's a lot more fast-paced. It's, my people versus your people. It's using all the godly powers that we've saved up, and it's using the full force of the simulation. So when you throw tornadoes, there's a real strategy of how you throw them and where you throw them. If you're creating earthquakes, it's how, the rules that these earthquakes follow. It's just absolutely fascinating.
And are you going to be able to, if you want to focus more on single player, like just building your world out versus multiplayer, is there a complete enough experience for people who kind of just want to be the god of their people and not worried about other gods?
This is the thing, is for me, sometimes I love the peace of single player. I love, sometimes I feel a bit embarrassed to go on multiplayer.
Sure.
So there's, when you've got this home world, and what you're doing is just helping your followers in that home world. But anytime you can take some of those followers and play through the single player campaign. And the single player campaign is a story. It's a story of you're trying to get to approach this thing called the Dark Tower, and you're taking your people on this journey to this Dark Tower. And I love that aspect of it, and that single player aspect that you can actually play through. If you take your little people, I like this death mechanic, because death mechanics I've always had an issue with. If you take your little people, you're playing through a single-player campaign, and your little people die, your home world is less those little people. If you win in part of the single-player campaign, you've got more people to bring back into your home world and invest in your home world. So you've always got your base, which you're building up, which you're kind of turtling up.
Sure. Now, because the game has such a fast development cycle, do you think that that's letting you be more focused? I mean, every fans of you and those who aren't fans of you all will constantly quote your penchant for big promises.
Big promises.
Is the smaller dev cycle letting you kind of stay focused and not sort of stray into that territory?
Well, this is the reason to do Kickstarter. Well, there's lots of reasons to do Kickstarter, but one of the big things is people kept saying, you're promising too much, you'll keep on promising too much. I'd have interviews with people like yourself, I'd get too excited, and then that would turn into a promise.
But new games are exciting.
Now it's not my promises. It's anyone that invests in Kickstarter is part of the development team. And we are going to be releasing, early in the new year, the first prototype to... A lot of the people have pledged on Kickstarter. We're going to be using analytics to analyze the way they play. We're going to be taking their suggestions. I'm already doing daily videos, which feeding back on people's suggestions, and we're going to incorporate in the game. So it's not my promises. It's all of us.
You're passing the blame on to everyone.
Yeah, I am. You know,
if a promise doesn't get it in, it's all everyone's fault.
If you pledge, then you know, it's as much your fault as it is my fault. And this is because this the secret of, for me, the secret ingredient in a great game is this simple. It's the number of times it's been played. Is the more hours it's been played, the more likely it is to be a great game. And how do you play a game for hours and hours and hours? You know, so there's some great examples of great games that have been played for hours and hours and hours. Minecraft is definitely one of them. Is you engage the community of people that cares about the game and cares about and is fascinated about it. And what better way to test that than someone who's pledged their hard-earned money to it? And so, you know, using, you know, thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of people to help craft that experience and get it absolutely right, I think is going to be the best way of developing a great game.
All right. So you mentioned the Kickstarter a lot.
Yeah.
Right now it's over halfway mm-hmm. to its goal.
Yep.
What are your expectations for the Kickstarter over the course of the next week, and what are your plans? I know Kickstarter's rules are if it doesn't meet the goals, you have to kind of retool your idea. What are your plans if it doesn't hit that goal?
I think if it doesn't hit the goal, then there's some very simple questions to ask. And the simple question is, do people want to have a reinvention of a good game? I mean, it is a brave thing to do.
Sure.
You know, it would be much easier to say, well, let's do a role-playing game.
Right.
Or let's do an action-adventure game. But to reinvent something which tends to withering a bit is a brave thing to do. And if the Kickstarter doesn't get supported, maybe people don't want God games. For me, I love that feeling of power. I love that feeling of influence on the world. And I'd love to play a game like that. And I haven't seen those games for a while. We should ask ourselves that simple question. If the Kickstarter fails, if it fails by a lot, then, you know, maybe this is not a concept that should be taken forward. If it fails by a little, then we've got some choices ahead of us.
And you mentioned Minecraft and sort of your older games.
Yes.
What were there any specific inspirations for you when you went in to start redefining the God game genre that you pulled from?
Well, I think it was it's the land manipulation from Populous with the I loved the digging and the tunneling in Dungeon Keeper. I loved that, and the strategic feeling of combat in Dungeon Keeper. It's the sort of beautiful world of black and white. I'm blatantly stealing some features from other games that I wasn't involved with. I want the battles to be on the scale of the Total War series. I don't want it to be two little icons fighting.
Right.
I think that the hardware, especially the PC, is great for supporting those big, big, meaty battles and then having your god powers in the middle of that. I love some things from Dust, the dynamic nature of the landscape. When big things happen, they should be really big. So we've got things like tidal waves. It's not a little, you know, 1 meter high
right.
wave. It's a land destroying cataclysmic event. So you know, it's what I think design should always do is kind of cherry pick features from different games.
Awesome. And we talked about this earlier when you brought up Kickstarter, but this year specifically has been very atypical with a lot of the best games of the year, the most respected games of the year, came from small studios, and there were less giant AAA games. Why do you think that this year saw such a shift? Is it because the new consoles are probably on the horizon, or do you think it's something else?
Oh, I think it's your fault.
Probably.
Because I think we were all moaning, weren't we, just a couple of years ago about the lack of innovation in the industry, and, oh, you know, why is it always sequels? Why is it always games are the same? And I think what that does is that sets in a few people's mind, a few brave people's mind, then, you know, okay, now I'm going to leave my comfortable company and I'm going to start up in a little startup. I was one of those people.
Sure.
And what do you do in a little startup? You don't try and take on Call of Duty. You try and do something differently, and you try and do something which bucks a trend. This is why we're doing Goddess, and why we did Curiosity, is because it wasn't something that you would apply to an existing formula. It wasn't like a sequel. And that innovation I love, our innovation, I predict, will last for a certain amount of time, and then some new things will be defined, maybe new genres will be defined, and within a few years you'll be moaning about lack of innovation again.
So you're aiming for PC and tablets, but hopefully game does well, company grows, you're able to do bigger things, and maybe move on to the potential next consoles. What do you actually want out of the next console generation, and what would pull you back into developing for consoles as opposed to kind of tablets and PCs, which is your focus now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main thing I want consoles to do is to realize that there's more to the world than just that plasma screen stuck on the wall. I want them to be connected. I want them to be as usable and accessible as my tablet and phone is. To take the techiness out of it, but to have surprise us all with some of their delightful functionality. You know what? If you look at the 360, it was way ahead of its time.
Oh, sure.
It had it had really good avatars. It had, it had XBLA. It had achievements. All of these were invented almost by the 360, and that was in addition to the hardware. So I think for the next generation, it's going to be really interesting to what else they do rather than just give us a nice, powerful box.
Instead of doing a better thing than we have now, a different thing.
Yeah, it's very, very accessible. I don't think people have the patience that they're used to anymore to, configure things. It's just got to work. So very, very accessible. Everything just works together, linked absolutely into my digital life in a really delightful way. And support the things that are inevitably going to be really important, like multi-device play. I'm a huge fan of... I no longer like to sit down in one room anymore. I like to move around and, it's just supporting that and loving that as part of it. But I love consoles. I love the big opuses that consoles enable. And, I don't think they're going anywhere. I just think that we've got lots more stuff.
Sure.
Now.
So, I'm sure I could ask you questions for the next 6 hours, but the main thing I'm interested in finding out is just what this year specifically has impressed you the most, game-wise?
It's been a sort of spotty year, hasn't it? I mean, there was a big lull in the summer.
Right.
I love Journey. I was one of those people that was sitting saying to myself, what the hell's going on? And and I love the minimalistic approach of Journey. I love Far Cry 3.
It's sort of the exact opposite of Journey.
It is. It's complete opposite. But what they did so brilliantly is the characterization and the characters were fantastic. And the open world nature of the game was just brilliant. I mean, I did find it slightly bizarre that I had to go killing sharks to make my wallet bigger. It seems,
shark skin wallet's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is.
Now I kind of want one.
Yeah, I want one, but I'm definitely not going to go into my local bay and bring out a spear and start stabbing a shark. I like Black Ops. I like Black Ops 2 as well. I thought it was, it shows the real benefit of iterating a franchise and refining the rough edges. And, they've kept on doing that. I thought, the zombie section, I loved that. I actually loved the Black Ops 2 zombies. I thought that was, they went way beyond the Call of Duty.
You had to.
So it's there's been a few examples. I'm yet to play Zombie U, and we'll have to see how that plays. I played a bit at E3, but I haven't played it other than that.
Awesome. And so, if all goes well, when can gamers hope to finally get their hands on Goddess?
Well, if you go to Kickstarter and pledge, you're going to get your hands on Goddess very early in the new year. If you don't pledge, it's going to be probably summertime, back into summertime, or early autumn, once you'll get your hands on it.
Awesome. And so what's in the curiosity box? Just in case the world ends next week. We'll hold this section until then. How close are we? Can you say that?
We've just released an update. Just went out yesterday, actually. which added a few more new features. And one of those few features were these enhanced stats, so you can really see how far people have got. We're releasing another update soon, which shows you how far everyone's gone and how far they've got to go. So I don't want to spoil that surprise.
Exciting.
But you're not halfway there yet.
Not halfway there?
No.
Now I'm just imagining you said you only expected so many
people
to be...
In terms of layers.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
all right.
But it is astounding to see how much has been done so far.
Sure, yeah. How many tubes have been tapped away.
Yeah, it is incredible. I think it's 10 billion taps.
Is that all?
That's a lot of skin.
That's a lot of skin flakes being thrown around iPhones. Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. We're super excited to get our hands on Goddess next year.
All right, and welcome back. I hope you enjoyed an extremely long interview with the gentle tones of Peter Molyneux, who is just by far the most passionate person I've ever met in the industry.
Just kind of bleed through in your discussion with
him? He just cannot. Like, he walked into the room to interview, and it was just like, oh, cool. And I was just like, oh, how are you doing? And he's immediately just like, I was playing Far Cry 3. And it's like, dude, settle down.
He just can't. We haven't started yet.
He can't. Like, we just started talking. I'm like, so what have you been doing recently? Oh, I've been playing this game, and the industry is like this, and I just can't. And I'm like, simmer down, bro. I actually at one point was like
record.
Getting ready to like yell, like, turn the camera on,
pop the brakes.
Yeah, we also did a video interview, so you'll be able to see that soon. But hot it's the same seat, as the audio, so if you don't feel like it, I understand. So we don't have any reviews except for Lorenzo. You reviewed Skylanders Giants for the Wii U.
For the Wii U, 3.5. All right.
So that's this review of Skylanders Giants for the Wii U.
The figures look cool and the base lights up.
You know what's the issue with that?
The base lights up and the figures light, their eyes light up.
It looks
and their hands
pretty
light.
Effing it's, cool.
Like, I would just sit there and just switch the guys out and it's awesome.
And listeners can note the enthusiasm in your voice about Skylanders Wii U
compared to
versus Fuse. Get a good insight into the game industry.
Ain't no action figures for Fuse.
Question of the week last week. If you win, we can give you either a download code for a game. We have so many games in this office and so many cool things. You can just shoot us an email and we'll send you something.
Yeah.
You can only win once a year, but doesn't mean you shouldn't answer. I think that's what Tom told
us. Does it reset come 2013?
It does. So just hurry up and everyone throw your votes.
Yeah, win
in.
Now.
I asked everyone
and
last
then win
week.
Later.
Last week our question of the week was like Ken Levine said, BioShock games potentially continue, except each time it's a totally different situation. What would you want the situation to be? So some of the answers we got. Somebody wants tree houses, Forest Moon of Endor style.
Holy shit. That's a good one.
That was from Tombulus.
Nice.
We also got Daddio238. I would like a BioShock game where everything has gone to shit in some way. And even though the idea is used a lot in games, I'm confident that Irrational could make it brutal, peaceful, or a brutal, beautiful piece of work. He's just saying, like, government should be gone, post-apocalypse, everything going to hell. somebody wants a Pokemon BioShock crossover. Somebody said that they should make an Australia version, but it would just be a remake of the first game, except just instead of having Would You Kindly, just having them say mate.
Makes no sense.
Super BioShock Galaxy from Unoriginal. And so the winner is Space Wolf,
nice.
Who said, I want the next BioShock to be in a volcano, or even better, go into the whole underground thing in the center of the Earth. But there's a twist. Instead of magma and rock at the center of the Earth, there's actually a forest paradise with waterfalls and dinosaurs. Also, it should star Brendan Fraser.
Of course it should star Brendan Fraser.
This is like the land of the
lost.
I was
like, that's cool, until he said Brendan Fraser. I'm like, yep, I'm sold. This is going to be amazing.
So yeah, that's
from the Mummy to video games, just amazing.
So Space Wolf, send us an email and we'll hook you up with some sort of game. We have so many games, you guys.
Yeah, something cool.
So many games. And so question of the week this week, it's actually a fan suggestion.
Oh my god!
Let me pull it up. Let me pull it out of my Twitter app. It's from Nico saying, "What's your favorite mediocre game?"
That's
this
a
sort of
pretty good one.
It's a pretty good one. And you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'm going to go, and it's one that I played just this year, Asura's Wrath. I had a lot of fun with it, even though it's mostly like an interactive anime. But it's really cool, really fun to watch, and
he's
the QuickTime events
guy.
Are amazing.
All right.
I'll say it like
Mr. Wayne. So...
You're going to have to skip me because I'm still thinking.
Oh, man. Okay. Mediocre game. I'd say Spider-Man Web of Shadows was pretty mediocre. But
did you
I
like
loved
it that much?
Yeah, I loved it. It was one of the better open worlds of Spider-Man, I think. And yeah, a lot of
like
people
what?
Hated on that web zip ability, but I love the crap out
web
of it.
Web zip's super cool.
No, it's super cool.
Mine,
super cool.
Mine's
super
actually cool. One we mentioned. See, mine's a really close tie. The only reason I'm not going to say 50 Cent Blood on the Sand is because I stand by that game being fucking awesome. I'll give it to Dark Sector, though, which I brought up earlier. Dark Sector was actually the first next-gen game announced ever. It was like a Game Informer cover in like 2004, 2005.
I have that issue,
I
think.
Wow. It was the first next-gen game announced. And by the time it came out, it was a completely different game. And it was super like, there were no glaring issues with it. And your character threw glaives as his main attack. It was
there's
and
not
you
enough
glaives.
Like, fleshy, like, they look like the darkness.
Yeah, almost. Well, I mean, they when they're on your arm, they're all like that. And when you throw them, they're, like, sort of, like, glassy, like, black glass.
That's
and
cool.
You could just, like, you'd throw them and control them in slow motion and cut multiple people's heads off. It was super good.
That's awesome.
I love that game, despite its mediocrity. And that is by far my favorite mediocre game.
I think I'll have to go with, and if I went back and played this today, I would probably hate it's so much, but Buck Bumble on N64. Anyone with me on this? That game was pretty bad, but I didn't have much disposable income with which to
couldn't
buy
get enough
N64
of it.
Games, so I just played it and played it and played it, and it was mediocre. It was just so run-of-the-mill.
So mediocre. Like, so mediocre you couldn't consume it quickly enough.
Yeah, it was just...
Super mediocre.
It was just eh. It was just meh.
But
and yet,
in a place somewhere in your heart,
the theme song for that game sticks with me to this day.
Somewhere in your stupid, strange heart.
What is the theme song? Come on, do it.
It's I can't do it. It's like reggaeton. We should like splice it in.
No, I want you to do it.
Yeah, come on.
It's like
that was
the Buck Bumble.
That was super racist.
No, that is actually what it sounds like. You're gonna have to.
Was it the? Was it like the? The rhino, Rastafarian rhino music from Jade Empire?
No, it was it was more intense than that. It was
from Jade Empire?
I remember that, yeah.
That's exactly how it goes. You guys have no idea.
Yeah, I remember playing that game.
All right, so yeah, you can either send us a message on Twitter at GR Radio Radar or comment on the article to get a... to get your own...
To get a fun time.
Get a fun time. We'll send you a game or something.
Yeah.
That ain't no thing.
get a fun time.
But yeah, it's on Twitter, GR Radio Radar. You can follow us on Facebook. Just type in Games Radar. You'll get to it. Go to GamesRadar.com for tons of stuff. Be sure to rate us on iTunes. And come back on Monday for a special episode starring Henry Gilbert, Brett Elston, and a bunch of Mega Men. Lucas Sullivan being the most mega of them.
Yes, and actually one of the Nintendo Power staff doing their first ever podcast.
Really?
Because Nintendo wouldn't let him.
Chris Hoffman's first podcast?
Yep. And we were like, what? And then he did a good job.
It's a good good merger of new, old, and everything in between here on Radio
it's
Radar.
Just beautiful.
And next week we should have a pretty awesome show for you. It should be a few hours long. Or it'll be super short because we may not have time. One of those two. definitely just keep checking out GamesRadar.com, and we will talk to you next week. Bye. Which created the biggest buzz?
That's a stupid question.
Your stupid question.
Sorry.
On your card. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. All right. Flip them.
Flip them. Stick them. Seal it. Bye.
I went with Centipede. When was it released? 1980. I wasn't alive when Centipede came out, but I have to assume that it created a lot of buzz because it was Centipede, right? That's all
the
I really.
Trackball.
That's really all I have.
That's what you got today, huh?
Oh, sorry.
Oh boy.
What about you? What about you? Why did you do that?
I went with Super Mario Kart because.
Wait, that picture's wrong. It has a blue shell.
Because that's
that ain't
game,
in Super Mario.
That's
Kart.
A game that everybody played for years, and they still talk about it. And it's one of the most widely recognizable kart games, and racing games. Period.
Did you just say bull kart?
No.
I think you said bull cart.
I don't know what that means.
Me either. That's why I got confused.
I had Bioshock, so that instantly makes me the winner because, you know, before there were Plasmids and Eve, people were like, oh my God, this game's going to be amazing. And then when it came out, people were like, yes, it is amazing. I'm so glad I looked forward to it all this time. That's the definition of buzz right there.
I don't know if it is.
The definition of buzz.
I had Nintendogs because it revolutionized the way you could have pets. No. Besides, you know, the Tamagotchi, this was like a real pet that you could pet for real.
With a touchscreen.
With a touchscreen. That's all I got. 2005 release.
Aren't these supposed to be like minute-long arguments?
You're shh.
We don't need these things.
Let's be quiet.
Just shh. Go ahead.
Just give me a